If there's anything better than getting a few of your favorite things from McDonald's, it's getting a few of your favorite things from McDonald's for less in the McDonald's app. Delicious. Order in the McDonald's app today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, only in the app. Enjoy a breakfast sandwich for just $1, like a sausage McMuffin with egg. Offer valid one time per day from 4/29 to 5/12/24 at participating McDonald's. Must opt into rewards.
Hello, this is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend Deep Dive with Dana Carvey. Hey, Dana.
Glad to be here, Conan.
It's a six-part mini-series where I, Conan O'Brien, along with occasional help from my assistant, Sonam Avsesian.
Hi.
And my producer, Matt Gourley.
Hi.
Go deep into the weeds with one of my favorite comedians and friends, Dana Carvey. Enjoy.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Well, I'm a very happy person because once again, I'm sitting with Dana Carvey and we're just having a blast making these mini episodes, acting like fools and not worrying about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
Dana, see, I want to ask you a question.
I took orders.
Can I ask you a question?
I don't want to interrupt. Yeah, what? Go ahead. Go, Conan. Conan, what's wrong? I like in movies
intro.
Where they say the guy's name every second. Conan, say something, Conan. What's wrong, Conan?
Well, I just thought that maybe... Hey, Conan.
Hey, Conan.
You know, you brought up something on one of the other
about
episodes.
About comedy.
Well, you know, you brought up something that I wanted to riff on just for a second because it got me thinking. You were talking about how John Wayne in movies doesn't know, not only doesn't know fear, but is angry at the very idea of fear.
Which I love.
Yeah, and you did a thing where it's like, yeah. You know, Walter Brennan's like, well, if the sub goes any deeper, we're going to blow up. And he's just like,
well, we'll go deeper. Take her down, Pappy.
Yeah, and he just doesn't
care.
We'll
explode out of the ocean. Get out of my face, Pappy. I can explode. I don't care.
Yeah, and so I was listening to that, and it was reminding me that my favorite villains, see if you know what I'm talking about. My favorite villains in movies are ones who they have a meticulous plan, and then someone comes in the room and tells them that the whole plan's been ruined by something they didn't foresee, and the villain is intrigued rather than being.
Rather than upset.
And my favorite one of all time, my favorite one of all time is in Die Hard. The villain.
Alan Rickman.
Hans Gruber. And so Hans Gruber has been working on a plan to steal the money from this building, and he's been working on the plan. I think for about 4 years, and they've thought it out to the second. And then they've got it all worked out perfectly. And then a guy comes running in the room and says, we didn't count on this, but there's a policeman loose in the building. He has the he has a gun. He's killing our men. He has the charges that we need to blow up the safe that everything depends on, and we have no idea where he is or who he is. And like Hans Gruber, the normal reaction would be like, fuck, we're out. Get out. Everyone get the fuck out. Get the fuck, let's get back to Germany. Everybody, let's get back. But instead, they tell him this, and Hans Gruber goes, intriguing. And I'm like, what? And then they come in later on and they say, well, he just blew up this and he blew up that. And he's like, this policeman, I must come to know him better. He's like, no. Right. You're so screwed. And up to the point where at the end of the movie, he's finally punched off the building and he's falling to his death. But he's firing his gun.
He's still firing his gun,
going like, I'm intrigued by this policeman who's taken my life from me.
How many times, and I know comedians have done this bit, I'm sure, but how many times can they still do it and make it believable where the good people are caught, the bad guys tied them all up, and some fuse go off or whatever, and then like, goodbye, Mr. Bond. You know, they always leave the room to allow them. And the other one I love is when some old movie, and then they meet the stranger, and the stranger walks away, and they go, hey, mister, what do they call you? And he turns and he goes, Abe Lincoln. I love that. Or with Dr. Lovelace. Dr. Lovelace of Wild Wild West. The dwarf genius.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened to him? I don't know. He said, he was talking gibberish. He said something about a It's like 1860, something about a television. It's like he's gonna,
that's the big twist at the end.
He's gonna invent it.
No, I do love that old trope of, Mister, you never told us your name. My name? Gandhi. You just kicked the shit out of everyone in town. What's your name? Gandhi.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the same ring if you like. Hey, Mister, what's your name? Genghis. Genghis Khan. And John Wayne did play Genghis Khan.
John Wayne, in one of the worst casting decisions of all time, yes, played Genghis Khan in a movie, and they gave
what?
Him, yes, he played Genghis Khan, and they gave him,
sorry, yes, they did, like they Asianized his
it was something you,
I wouldn't say.
You should look it up online and just behold what happened in America in the past.
Can I do a brief? Because we did a
you can do whatever you want.
This is a brief revisit to the idea of Hitler, Bobby and Jack Kennedy, and Elvis, who fake their death and are in a bunker beneath Las Vegas, taking youth pills, awaiting their chance to emerge to the surface and dominate the world.
Yeah,
and
this old bit. It's been ripped off by everyone.
Like, who doesn't have this bit? Chappelle closed his special with this bit. But I just wanted to extenuate one little part.
Sure.
Bobby Kennedy is, I know people are listening right now going, what? Bobby Kennedy is trying to teach Adolf Hitler how to speak English, and everyone's a little frustrated with the process.
Because they've been in this bunker for a long time.
They've been in this bunker. They faked their death 60, 70 years ago, and they've been in this bunker a long time, and they've got to get Hitler up to speed, you know. So Elvis is like, Bobby, come on, you're wasting your time. I'm going to put on a dress, go up the shaft elevator, get some Dunkin' Donuts. Well, what about you, Jack? You want some?
I would like a glazed donut before this evening's over. I don't ask for it because it's easy. I ask because it's hard.
Why do you always say that last part?
I don't know. I just kind of like it. Bobby, what about you?
Bobby, what about you?
I'm pretty close to teaching Elvis some basic words. You want to see?
Bobby hasn't learned one word in 70 years. Come on, you're kidding yourself.
I'm teaching Adolf.
Teaching Adolf a new word. Here it is. Adolf, repeat after me, butterscotch.
Butterscotch.
you see, Elvis? Do you hear what he said? Butterscotch.
Butterscotch. That doesn't sound nothing like butterscotch. Try something like cotton candy.
Elvis, sorry, Hitler, say...
It's hard to keep track of everyone, isn't
it? It's been 70 years. Hitler, say cotton candy.
Cotton candy.
Oh, wow, he suddenly gets really good?
Said it. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
Why can't they... I mean, I understand why Hitler cannot come to the surface.
Right.
But why can't the rest of them come to the surface?
Well, because they look like they did from the 60s, so they have to wear disguises to go up.
You haven't thought this through.
Well, they're in the bunker and they're waiting, and their plot is to take over the world. But you know.
Oh, okay.
Now, like, Jack, what exactly are we going to do with the world when we take it over?
We will do things that people do when they take over planets.
Now, what exactly is that, Jack?
We will find out when we cross that bridge. We don't do it because it's easy. We do it because it's hard.
Just foolishness.
I really wish you wouldn't say that.
Is this going to make the cut?
No. Listen to me. Here's what's great.
Here's what's great. God damn it.
No. Stop it. Stop throwing your paper around. You don't need this. This isn't necessary.
Yeah, but we can do authentic.
I know. But listen to me. Here's what I want to say.
Yes.
Here's what I want to say to you.
Okay, Conan.
The whole point of... The whole point of screwing around in comedy is not knowing where it's going or why. And often the funniest ideas don't have a reason for existing. There is not a good... It's hilarious to have all those guys in the bunker together under Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. You don't need... Why are they there? It's not important.
Don't want to know. I think the subconscious reacts to things like this. And if it is subconscious, it can last. It can be repeated. And it can go on and on. Like a little thing I did called Chopping Broccoli. I like to do bits that are better 40 years later. Secret ego coming out.
he always had confidence, you know. We knew underneath that we were someone we could monetize.
Sorry, go ahead. That was Scotty Flopnop, whatever.
Is that's the manager character you go into every
night.
Yes, and
then. But you're totally a kindred spirit, Conan. I remember the last time I was on your show, I was in the makeup chair, and I looked up at the monitor, and there was no sound. And I just saw a profile of you. I couldn't hear what you were doing, but you were so committed. It really, that was the hardest I've laughed in a long time.
Oh,
you
that's
were
just, nice.
You know how you'd go to that gear
yeah.
of just assaulting abstract madness.
I have, well, you have it
that's
too.
That's why you have super fans.
We have a gear. We have a gear right. where I will commit all the way, and at that then, point, you don't care what happens. You just know I'm going to 7, and if people hate
11.
It, yeah, or 11, or whatever you want to say, you're going to go there, and if they despise it later on, that's not important now. Now I'm just going to go to 11 and see what happens.
Well, what I always try to do when I do stand-up and I'm not feeling funny at all, I try to make myself laugh when I get to the mic by saying something that'll make me laugh. So it could be something really, you know, whatever. Right. You know, whatever. Because the whole conceit of the idea of the clown being funny and here comes the funny and he's being funny. Oh, shh, quiet, he's being funny. Ah, is
makes you self-conscious.
Makes you self-conscious. So to get out of it, you know, you just need to be kind of crazy. So.
You know, I've found recently over the, it took me like years to get to this point.
Yes.
But the other day, you know, I'm doing the monologue and I don't do much of a joke monologue anymore. I just try and screw around as much as I can.
Right.
But I had like 3 jokes and they were about Trump and his taxes. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that was in the news.
Have to do it.
And I felt like, you feel like I'm only doing this because people expect this. So I did the first joke and it kind of got like a ha ha ha. And I actually said, don't worry, this part will be over soon. And they laughed harder at that than they did at the joke.
Yes.
And then I did the second one and I said, yep, almost there. And then I did the third, you know, and I started to just basically say, yeah, this, I'm here. I'm very aware that you're not finding this that amusing.
Right.
Because there's 1,750 late night talk shows and I'm the 751st person tonight to talk about Trump and his taxes. So let's just do this quickly. Right. None of us are happy about this algebra assignment, but let's get it done and get on to the fun stuff. And it had this, because I was being honest about it, I think, I don't know, it just made it more enjoyable for me, and I think maybe made it more enjoyable for them.
I love that this is the life, it's like trying to catch the wind comedy. You never graduate, you never finish, and there's always some other level of confidence you can get to where you're just completely existing. You're not self-conscious. The second voice is quiet. So I love that here you are 4,000 hours later still taking a little chance or twisting your thing.
Well, you said something. I don't even think the mics are on, but we were talking.
That's when the best stuff happens, unfortunately.
No, you touched
me. I'll be honest.
You said it's paper tissue.
In a fireplace.
In a fireplace. It's that quick, meaning you kill. You say it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's going to kill. And then it's like there's 10 minutes later and, hey, I thought you killed. And people, hey, good set. You know, and then a lot of times you're just in a car pretty quickly after that by yourself in the back. And it's like Dustin Hoffman after he gets Catherine Ross in The Graduate. Like, okay, all right, you know. And then you can't be like the Stones or anyone else and just wind down on these 10 songs and see how well you can play them for 60 years.
No.
And I saw Sting's going to play his songs and, you know, we have to come up with new variations and new combinations.
This is something, I don't think we've talked about this, but I think you're the same way. I'm so envious of musicians.
Well, we'd love to have done that.
Because you and I, yeah. I think both, if we could have been musicians, would have done it. Because because I've always thought this. I've done gigs, done, you know, benefits or things, and a really big rock star, I'll be the comic, and the really big rock star's there. And it's a Sting, or it's a Bruce Springsteen,
yeah.
huge star, or it's a, you know, John Mayer. So I'll do my thing, and I am judged joke to joke. You're only as good as
totally.
Your bit.
Yeah.
And so like, oh, love that. Oh, that one, not so great. Oh, that one's really good. Not so much that one. And you feel like you're fighting for your life the whole time. Then you get off, And then you see the Sting come out, and he goes, "Every breath you take, every move you make," and people are just like, "Oh my God, this is fantastic." Now, is he sweating backstage?
Yeah,
I wonder how this is going to go.
How do I do it?
No, he's not.
If I ever lose my faith in you, and we're up there just dancing like clowns, and dancing for our breakfast,
and I see them backstage, and they're just strapping on their instrument, and they know
they're all tuned up.
Yep, ready to go. Someone else has tuned their guitar or their bass. They're all good.
Interesting. Someone, you know, as the evolution of a rock star or pop star, like they'll, you know, in the early days, they'd have their shirts off, you know, and then it's a shirt maybe buttoned really low. And then eventually there's a cummerbund underneath the shirt. And then with there's a scarf around the neck and maybe some jewels and things. It's like this magic trick. I'm not 75, you know.
Well, you know, who's doing that is, you know, Aerosmith.
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler has been adding clothing.
Yeah, he's like a magician of Black Witch magic.
And now I do think, I really
look
do.
Look over here.
I think if a truck hit him, like white doves would just fly out. I think he's got like live birds in there. He's got a whole women's department store would explode and doves would be flying around and there'd be headbands and
Can I say something about that? I saw him on a motorcycle with a woman and my wife and I both went, "Is that Steven Tyler?" And we couldn't figure it out. Then we looked at the motorcycle and the motorcycle had scarves tied around it.
Yeah.
And we went, "Of course that's him."
It's
kind of smart though, you know? I mean,
I thought I saw Steven Tyler in a hardware store, but it was a broom.
I saw a lady's mannequin.
Sona, where else can you go surfing and skiing the same day, huh?
I don't know.
Or check out a world-class art museum and then camp at a dark sky sanctuary that night, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you hike through redwoods and then get a luxury spa treatment?
Where?
Well, you live there. California. California, Sona. No matter where you go across the state, you'll find a way to play. I'm a California resident, so are you. Sona, you are a lifelong California resident.
I'm a lifer. I love this place.
This is a beautiful state. Gorgeous. So many different, wonderful ecosystems in one state. You can hang out by a Palm Springs pool. You know, you can go whale watching, you can go hiking in Yosemite, and then talk about the great cities in California. You get all this amazing food, sushi, whatever you want, they got it in California. Hey, if you can't find it in California, man, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. I made that up on my own. Anyway, I love California. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
We don't have that thing. We were never sex symbols. I mean, maybe you were more than me being tall and strapping. You don't know the sex symbol, Conan.
I'm jacked with a dick that goes
I'm like a funny little clown.
Wait, what happened? What happened?
What did you say?
It just goes all night.
You went.
I'm not even there, and it just takes off and goes.
Can we get a playback on that? Because that was like a Zap Ruder.
Definitively, no, we could not.
What I said was not sexual. What I meant was my penis leaves at night and goes and does things. And not sexy things.
Like Batman? Yes.
What?
Like Batman?
It fights crime occasionally.
Well, let's do another.
But it also sometimes runs up charges. It goes places and it orders very expensive Italian meals.
This dovetails into another quick episode of Jimmy Stewart.
Conan's happy already.
Someone's going to perform oral sex on Jimmy Stewart. I guess it was Katharine Hepburn.
We did this on a long time ago. Yeah. You did. Jimmy Stewart, and he's
you led me to the bit with your dancing dick.
That's okay. There was no criticism, Mr. Defenso. Defenso 9000.
It made me laugh. Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, I'm just setting you up. This is your are you going to take us to the next level with Jimmy Stewart?
I'm going to do some variations on this, but basically to the listeners. I don't like blue graphic stuff, but I love sexual stuff that's done in an abstract way. So this is Jimmy Stewart sitting back Katharine Hepburn's about to perform oral sex on him, and he decides to verbally go a different way. Wow, okay. Perfect setup.
Nicely done. And curtain up.
Yeah, well, this is kind of fun, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's not rush it today. Yeah. Yeah. Just look at it, would you? Yeah. Yeah. Just look at it for a while. Well, now look the other way. Yeah, look away. Now just think of something else. Think of a head of lettuce or a cucumber. Well, that would be too sexual. And now look back at it. Yeah. See, I like when I see the surprise in your eyes. But you have to not look at it so you can be surprised to look at it. Well, here's a couple dollars. I want you to go down to the street, and I want you to go to the Five and Dime. Get yourself a malted and get me a payday bar. Yeah, I'll wait here. Yeah, well, welcome back. Yeah. Well, don't look at it yet. It's been 17 minutes. All right, give me the payday bar. All right, now look back at it. Well, that's what gets me off. That's what I like. I like the surprise in your eyes because you forgot what it was. You went to the candy store. Now you see it for the first time. Fresh. You got what I call fresh eyes. So that's part two.
That's part two. So wait a minute.
She has to leave.
Are they sitting in a car? I don't know where they are. I picture them in a car.
I had them on an apartment in a couch, but right, initially it was in a car.
Now I'm feeling like they're both in a car, and while Catherine Hepburn is gone getting
stuff.
A malted and the payday bar,
yes.
Is he sitting there with his genitals exposed?
Yes, he's just sitting there with his manhood very, very friendly, in a friendly position, just waiting. And the turn on for Jimmy is that she's going to forget. See, she's not going to remember what it looks like.
But you know what kills me about this is that when he does say that arouses him.
Yeah,
he sounds like he doesn't sound aroused at all.
No,
you know what I mean. His voice. I know that's what I love about it. I hate to be overly analytical, but I just love that he's like, oh yeah. And you're like, wait a minute. That's not. I don't get a sense of someone blood rushing to that area.
No, it doesn't. It's not really sexual in a sense, right?
No. I think that's what's so funny about it.
I just like to see the surprise in your eyes. I mean, I like it when you just don't remember it, and I like when you come back and maybe. In the back of your mind, you have a name for it, but you don't want to tell me, right? You can name it anything you want. It's yours. But all I'm asking is, in the big scheme of things, you know, I'm nothing but a scurvy little spider. And you can call it anything you want. All I ask is you don't touch it, because that's when the game is over, you see. Everything changes. It, you know, people call it foreplay. I call it life.
But what happens if he's in the car? Yes. What happens if he's in the car and Mr. Potter in his wheelchair comes by and bangs on his window?
Mr. Potter.
What did he sound like? I'm trying to remember. Like, hey, you.
Let's see. Your father was nothing but a loser.
I just see him. Jimmy's in there waiting, and he's got it. He's exposed.
Yeah.
He's just pounding on the window, and Jimmy's waiting for Catherine Hepburn to come back and get his. And he's waiting for his payday.
Oh, Jesus Christ! It's Mr. Potter. Damn. Let me grab my cardigan and lay it over my friend down here. Yeah, that'll cover it up. Let me roll down the window.
Look at you with your penis exposed.
Oh, that's all in your imagination. You know, your eyesight's not so good. You're pretty old, you know. I've got a cardigan on my lap, that's all. There's nothing under there.
I saw what I saw.
You're a sick man, Potter. I always wanted to say this to you. Well, fuck you. There it is. I'm no longer. That's the lost ending.
Yeah.
That's the other lost ending.
Is that he just loses it on Potter?
I can hear the reviews. Dana Carvey leaning on characters from 1965, John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart amongst them.
I just love that.
Well,
I saw you naked from the waist down, George Bailey.
I just love that he
Well, this is, you know, I often think, and maybe this isn't the funniest part of the idea, but I, as you get older, you hear words like enabling and people pleasing, and you go, well, maybe Mr. Potter was like self-actualized. He drew strong boundaries. You know, he was just loaning money to people so they could buy houses. Jimmy Stewart was passive aggressive. He was bitter. He enabled Uncle Billy to stay an alcoholic and lose the money.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of
he's a classic enabler.
Yeah, classic enabler. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to have a, you could have a drink, you know. what am I going to tell him? He can't have a cocktail for crying out loud. Kind of dystopian world that we live in. See, my prayer and hope is that people in their 20s will go, well, look up It's a Wonderful Life and go, see Jimmy Stewart and go, oh, that was really funny what he was doing. But right now, it's just a funny old man.
You don't know. What you see, you have this voice in your head
that just says,
that's constantly,
I suck.
You know what? You have these two old men in the balcony at the Muppets are sitting in your head. And every time you do a hilarious bit, you yourself go, no one's going to know that. They're going to hate it. And it's not true. You don't need to do that. I'm your therapist now.
I like it. No, I'm the yin and the yang. I got two sides of my brain. Mm. You know, one is very joyous, happy, and the other one is like that. So it squeezes through and out comes, well, fuck you. That's just the way it goes up is the funny part to me. But anyway, we're wrapping up this episode.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up this episode.
Conan needs more friends. We've just changed the title.
I really don't.
Because I'm a friend and that's one.
If I've got you, I don't need anyone else.
Thank you, Conan.
Join us again. We're messing around. None of it means anything. Just
we're alive, man!
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sonam Ovsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Special thanks to Jack White for the theme song. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and the show is engineered by Will Beckton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.